Good day, and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is September 6th, 2002. The title of this session is The Underground Past and Present of the Howe Sound Mining Company's Holden Village Mine. We do have some miners present from the past, and this presentation will be by voice and also by video. You can find this by coming to the Tate Ministry office. Let's listen in.
The curator of the museum, and I know I've met many of you and look forward to meeting some more during this weekend. There are a number of programs scheduled for tomorrow, and those will be both announced and listed on the kiosk. We'll have a slide program by Linda Jensen in the morning at 10:45. There'll be a chance for a gathering of sorts for a group photo and some taking of video of participants. And we're hoping to have that about 3 o'clock, and then a 3:45 session on the homes, the family homes from Holden that Bill's brought along. And then another evening session tomorrow with Norm. So we'll have a number of activities. Certainly the museum will be open all day tomorrow and during the morning on Sunday. And I hope you all get a chance to come and see that. We've got the band scheduled for 1 o'clock. Linda has a couple of announcements to make, and then Norm will get started on the program.
Okay, first of all, if any of you brought slides or programs or any information that you do want presented, be sure and let us know, and we'll, you know, work it in on the stuff that we've got presented, because we're trying to put things put together within mind of flexibility. The other thing I wanted to do is remind you all that Patty Tappan isn't here, but she faithfully, at least once a year, gets out a Holden Miner for us, and posties went up this year, and it's costly. So I'm passing the hat again. I have an envelope. I'm going to pass it around and ask you to do whatever you can to donate toward the cost of that little newspaper we get. And if you do donate, please sign your name on the outside, because she always likes to know and acknowledge who contributes. If you want to write a check, you can make them payable to Patty Tappan, and I did put that on the envelope. But I am going to pass it around. If it doesn't get all the way around tonight, I'll pass it at the subsequent sessions. Also, if there are any of you that are not getting the newspaper that need to be on the list, put your, on the back side, put your name and address and say, you know, please send me a, please add me to the list. So I'm going to pass it around, and with that, we'll let Norm go with the program. And thank you.
Okay, well, it's this is a great opportunity for me to meet some of you and to show you, at least tonight, a little bit about what the mine looks like today underground. As Linda said, I'm Norm Day, and I work for the Forest Service, and I'm the project manager for the cleanup project that's going on. Although it may not look like much is going on right now, but we are generating a lot of paper, and well, we got to cut those trees, you know. I will be giving a presentation. The presentation I'm giving tomorrow night is specifically on the status of the cleanup project and kind of an overview of the remedies that we're looking at for that project. I'm a mining geologist by education and graduated from Augustana College. If any of you know Rudy Edmund, he was my major professor. He brought me out here in the early 60s to do some early work, way before Rick and a bunch of people on the museum. So I have a long history, and I'm really proud to be here. The presentation I'm doing tonight, actually I've combined two presentations into one, so hopefully I can get through it in time for Vespers. It's a combination of work we did to open up the 1500 level 2 years ago, and I think that was the last reunion, and some of you were here when we were in the process of doing that. I don't think we quite broken through when we had this session last year, so this will show you the work, kind of the entire picture of what we did to get into the mine and repair that. And then I'm going to flip into another presentation that's a number of pictures from underground on the three levels of the mine that we can currently get into that are open, the 300, 1100, and then the 1500 level. and where I have been able to find old historic pictures of some of the same places where I've taken pictures recently, I've tried to combine those pictures so you can see what it looked like before and after. And there may be some cases where I don't have the exact picture, but it's similar enough that unless for some of you that actually work in the mine, you'll know if I'm fibbing or not. But anyway, I don't mind being interrupted with questions as we go along. Hopefully, we can. What time? Vespers is at 7:30.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll get her started here. Can everyone see this okay? Do we need to turn the lights down, or is this bright enough for everybody? Where are those?
There's dimmers right back here.
Okay, the purpose for opening the up and entering the 1500 level mine, we're involved in an investigation for determining how best to clean up the mine. And there's contaminated water that's coming out of the 1500 level. And so there are a number of things that we wanted to look at underground that we could only see by going underground that would help us in designing a remedy to clean up the problem. So we needed to, of course, the mine portal 1500 level has been collapsed for, I don't know, at least 20 years. And we needed to repair that collapsed portal to get access into the mine. And we wanted to look at ways we might be able to design methods for in-mine control of water. We thought if there's a lot of water coming into the mine in a variety of places through cracks and fractures in the rock and other openings, that maybe we could find some way to divert the clean water from the dirty water before it has contact to come in contact with the sulfide minerals. And by getting underground, we might be able to make some observations. We might be able to identify some specific source of water that we could seal somehow so it couldn't get into the mine. And we want to look at the geologic conditions and the hydrologic conditions within the mine. And to look at the structural geology, we a couple of things that are being considered in remedies is putting in hydrostatic bulkheads in the mine that would eventually allow water to back up into the mine. And we had to do geotechnical and geological studies to determine whether or not it's feasible and where it might be feasible to put those bulkheads. Later, we expanded these studies to the other two levels that we could get access to, the 300 and 1100. This is a, you may not all be able to see it, but this is kind of a map of the, right here is the 1500 level portal. This is the west waste rock dump right here. The old mill building sits in here, and of course this is the road that comes up the hill to the third level. And what we did for the cleanup first, before we ever started removing the collapsed material, we had to be sure we knew the water was backed up behind that collapsed portal. So we had to be sure that we had a place for the water to drain and to settle out all of the particulate matter before the water entered Railroad Creek. So as the water comes out of the portal right here and flows along the ditch and then drops right into Railroad Creek here. Any of you that have been up there. So during the operation to open it, we diverted the water from here and came down all the way along the road here and then across the road and into the lagoon area that I think you probably know where I'm talking about, right along the road. It's kind of a natural settling pond. Of course, before we could really repair that portal, we had to dewater it. And up above, this is what the portal looked like before we started the work. And right up above it, the contract miners from Atlas Faucet out of Wallace, Idaho, they found a collapsed feature when the portal collapsed. It's about 100 feet of the core goes through about 100 feet of glacial till before it gets to bedrock. And that had collapsed the whole 100 feet. And it, as it collapsed, it created a void up above it. And these miners have noticed that and found that if they could go into that collapsed feature and then sink a shaft down, right, and come out right at the contact between the bedrock and the till, we'd be able to get some pumps in there and dewater that portal before we started digging into it. We didn't want an uncontrolled release of that water, like happened 20-some years ago. So here's a few pictures of, there's that collapse feature, and they were using a real small version of a slusher to remove the debris out of the way, and then they kind of made a pretty crude but effective little portal in there and add it to get back into that collapsed feature. And you can see as you come in here and go down, and right here's where they started sinking that shaft. And they had it pretty well figured out as to where that needed to be so they'd come out the right place. And you can see they were right on. Right here's the bedrock, and the shaft came down just about half bedrock and half glacial till, right where you want it to be. And once they did that, as you probably know, there's quite a bit of air that moves through the mine naturally, just because of the difference in temperature in the mine and outside. And there's always been a chimney effect in the mine, even during the mining days. I guess you had all the bulkheads and the airtight doors in there to keep control how that was coming. But once they opened that, it's just a rush of air. It sounded like a jet engine coming out of this, and it was really cold. Those when you worked around here, you can't see it in this picture, but I took some video, and there you could hear the noise, and you could just see their clothes vibrating from the wind. So then they crawled down in the hole, and we installed these pumps and dewatered the area behind there. And then this is the lagoon as the water was going in there and settling out the solids. Once we had dewatered it enough, then we started demolishing that that old portal had been there since 37. And this picture here, you can see, after we've removed a fair amount of the material, you can still see the timber uprights on the left and right ribs, and the timber across the back was broken right in half. There's a big boulder sitting in here. And that's just it was like that the whole 100 feet back to the bedrock. And so they removed about as much material as they could until they got the high wall so high, and then they started going in from there. And instead of using just timbers, they used a combination of steel sets and wood lagging instead of the old big timbers. And getting these first couple sets in was real critical so that they'd be right in when they got inside. I don't know if any of you have been involved in driving, trying to repair one of these old portals in unconsolidated material, but they had to drive these spilings ahead to keep the rocks from coming, the boulders coming down at them as they were moving or advancing the steel and timber sets. And they used a bunch of old railroad ties that up there, and then some of this angle iron. They would about 15 foot lengths and sharpen it and just drive it in with their air hammer. You can see then at the face, you had the material wanted to come in at the face too, so they had to prop all these big boulders up and keep them in place. Then they dig out on both the left and right ribs enough to get a 2.5 foot setting in, and then they would they'd remove the supports, and then they'd come in there and muck that all out, and then do it all over again, and drive spiling ahead and start the whole thing. That's one of the reasons it took about a month longer, month and a half longer, to get into the mine was because of the problem going through this glacial till. This is just another view of them working at the face. This particular glacial boulder was so heavy they couldn't haul it out with a little bobcat, so they had to drag it out. And then, once we got through the glacial, you guys are in a bad place. You ought to
No.
You know, you could go up there too if you want. You can actually lay down up there. Anyway, after we got through to the bedrock, this was the next problem the miners encountered. First off, you can see the line up here. This is where the water level was before we started pumping. So we pumped about 3 feet of water down. And you can't see it real well in this picture, but there are lines up here, just like line the rings in your bathtub, where at times this entire tunnel was filled with water at various times. Okay, we got to this point and we saw all these timbers and all this. It's a precipitate of primarily iron, but it's both aluminum and iron precipitate. I call it slime, but it's a precipitate that forms when the pH of the water changes and the iron and aluminum drop out. The two miners here wanted to find. We didn't know how far this stuff went back into the mine, and how much space we were going to need to store it, because we couldn't let that go into Railroad Creek. So they started walking back to see if they can find out how far. And this guy right here, he's about 6'6", and it looks like he's standing on the floor, but he's not. This stuff has so much buoyancy, he's actually suspended above the floor in this slime. And the guy out ahead of him is actually standing on a big stack of these timbers. That's why they went back about 70 feet, and it was just too unsafe, because you had these piles of timbers, and they weren't just mine timbers, they were the railroad ties. When they closed the mine, they salvaged, maybe 400 or 500 feet of track, up close, and just left the railroad ties. And as the mine flooded, and then you had rushes of water through there at various times of year, it just piled all these railroad ties in nice little piles periodically. And then the precipitate would back up behind it, and it was just a mess. And you can see this is one of the guy who came out of there. But that presented another problem. That little bobcat wasn't going to be able to handle this. So we had to shut down for about a week until they brought over one of their LHD low-haul dump tractors to get in there. And it had about a 2-yard bucket on there that could really make short work of that mess. We constructed a little berm up here, a pit, right outside the portal. If any of you have been up there yet, you've noticed it. If not, I'm sure you'll have a chance to get up there and look at it. But this was where we were, as the LHD went in there, it would scoop up the precipitate and the timbers, and you'll see some pictures, but then we put a grizzly right here, and the precipitate would go into the pond, the timbers would roll off, and then we'd stockpile. This is just a picture of the LHD working back in the, again, you can see right here is the high water mark. This is we got back in there, we had a little, went through a fault zone, and there had been a lot of material caved in, so you had kind of like a little dam, and we looked over the dam, and this was about three feet more of this slime is back as far as we can see. You turn around and look the other way, and right here you're looking out the portal. That's taken from about 500 feet back in, and you can still see the portal roll out. Some of you may not be able to see it, but you see these chunks right here? Looks like rocks or something. That's chunks of this precipitate that haven't completely broken up. And it's floating on the water, going right out the mine portal and down the channel and into our settling pond. Whoops, hit the wrong button. Here's the LHD with a bucket full of this precipitate. And he'd dump it on the grizzly right here, and it would just liquefy, just like water. It really had it held a lot of water. And it would look like it was standing, like right here. You'd go up and touch that, and just kind of liquefy.
What kind of pH?
pH, I don't know of this exact material, but the water coming out of the portal is about 5. as now the water coming, the seeps coming out from under the tailings are about 3. So it's entirely a different chemistry. The water's different coming out of the mine than what's coming out from underneath the tailings.
You assume that everything below 1500 is flooded?
Yes, it is. And I can't remember, I think I've got some pictures in here of, we did some sampling down that number 2 shaft as well. Anyway, this was a very interesting, here's a stack of these railroad ties, and we cut one open, and we thought maybe they had been creosote or something, and they weren't. It was still, it still smelled like fresh timber when you cut it, kind of preserved in that iron precipitate. On October 24th, the famous day, we finally filled this pond, holding pond, up with precipitate to the point where it was about ready to top over and flow into Railroad Creek. And we couldn't have that happen, so we had to shut the operation down and find some way to control the slime and that coming out the portal. So what the miners proposed and we adopted was to put 2 bulkheads in, emergency bulkheads. We observed, the miners were working 24 hours a day, but we observed that if they shut down for just a short period of time, that dirty water that came out of there would clarify very quickly. All the particles would settle out in the water. I mean, the water still had heavy metals in it, dissolved, but at least the sediment would fall out quickly. And so what we decided to do was to put, this bulkhead is located just about 110 feet in, just 10 feet beyond the contact of bedrock, and it's about 3 feet high. And then we had little slats in here so we could change the water level. The second bulkhead's about 500 feet back in, where I took that one picture where I kind of turned around and looked out, right at the fault zone. This is about 5 feet high. And so the theory was to back up water behind this bulkhead to this level, and that would allow everything to settle out. And then just safety margin, we had another bulkhead 500 feet or 400 feet toward the portal. That would be an extra precaution in case the upper one failed or something. And they've, over the last 2 years, they've worked very well. The water coming out of there is fairly clear. It hasn't done anything about the heavy metals, but it's certainly clarified the water. So those bulkheads are still in there. When we start doing the remedy, they're going to come out, and then we'll take out the rest of the slime and railroad ties that are in that portal so we can get heavy equipment all the way in. Right now, we can only walk that. Now, it's actually take a boat back. But okay, so that's what we did for repairing and getting access to the mine in 2000. In 2000, and then last year, and this year, we have been going into the mine and doing a variety of sampling the geochemistry of the water, getting a variety of samples from various places in the mine. So we have been getting into the mine. We've been doing some surveys for bats, and I'll tell you about that more tomorrow night. But anyway, this is a...
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What is your primary purpose in the project?
Clean up project yourself?
Just to clean.
Yeah. It's not a reclamation project. It's not just to make things look pretty. We're actually trying to clean the water up to meet state water quality standards.
What kind of budget are they talking?
Well, I'll get into that tomorrow night. But
you don't want to tell me.
No, I'll tell you, but I'm just getting into more detail. But the alternatives that we're looking at right now range from $2 million to $120
million.
Yeah. What range, yeah.
Hey, Green, there's no paper.
And you might remember, they only got $60 million worth of metal out of here when the mine was operating. So. Okay, the detail on this map probably can't all see it anyway, but it's a site map. Here again is the mill building with the 2 waste dumps. The mine portal's right here. And then this shows the trail, Honeymoon Heights Trail,
going up to the 550 level that we were talking about. And these are the dumps that you can see up on the hillside for the various levels up there. This is the 300 level, the highest level. Right there is the portal. The discovery point's up here, another 300 feet above the 300 level. The 300 level is open, and we went in there and did some sampling, water sampling, and other investigations. The 550 is caved, so you can't get into it. The 700, or excuse me, the level is that? 700 is caved. The 800 is caved. The 1100 you can get into, and we'll show you some pictures from that. And then, of course, the 1500 level we did get into and took, and I'll show you pictures. We have installed, of course, there's a locking door now. We have a locking metal door on the 1500 level portal to keep people from entering the mine. And we have put back gates, installed back, locking back gates on the 300 and 1100 level, again, to keep people out of the mine. It really is a fairly dangerous place for people to go into, and you'll see some of the hazards, particularly on the 1500 level, even for people that have the right equipment like we do when we go in there, it's still a hazardous place. And you'll see some records where there's been a lot of people going into the mine over the years with just flashlights. That's pretty dangerous.
Is the west winds, has that been blasted closed for the ventilation blower or fan?
Oh, the ventilation portal is over here.
Yeah.
It hasn't been, I don't think it was blasted, it's caved. Again, it came in here and went back about 300-400 feet and then intersected the bedrock. So it had a lot more pleasure till. We figured it's caved that whole stretch. You can look into the ventilator portal, but it's caved just a few feet beyond the portal.
Is there any water coming out of the upper portals? Or is it all?
There's a little water comes out of the 1100 portal.
Is it pretty bad water too?
Yeah. Yeah. And but that's just the way that portal, that's kind of an interesting level, and just because of the way it is, the drainage is situated up there, you have a little bit of a problem there. Most every place else, everything drains into the stopes or winzes and goes into the interior part of the mine. But,
in these settling lagoons, are they going to go back and reclaim that heavy metal?
Yeah, matter of fact, I didn't show all the pictures from that activity because it would just take a little bit longer, but we actually had them go in there and remove all the precipitate out of that lagoon area, and we put it up on another pit up on Tailings Pile 1 that if you walk around, you'll see that pit.
Is it,
had them put all
the metals other than what was mined, the copper, zinc, and...
Yeah, there's some hydrocarbons and other things like that in that one lagoon area right in here. And during the remedy, all this material is going to be removed and stockpiled. Well, anyway, you can't get into the 1500 level, but I talked about the bulkheads. We wanted to look at a bulkhead somewhere in the 1500. Well, when I get to the 1500 level, I'll show you where we're thinking about putting bulkheads in. But we have not been able to get to this part of the mine to assess the geologic conditions. So we're going to start off up here at the 300 level. Oops, no, we're not. This is a cross section through the mine, and these are the stopes, large stopes. This is a 1500 level right here where all the ore came out. And these just show you the size of the stopes. Well, the ore was removed. The dark ones here are the backfill, where the backfill tailings into those stopes. And everything below the 1500 level is flooded and the water comes out of the number 2 shaft and then flows out the mine, along with all the other water that comes in various places. Okay, the 300 level is sitting right up here. And there is a winze that connects the 300 level with this stope. And so you get airflow through the entire mine, and the error is fairly constant, somewhere between 45 and 49 degrees, and depending on the temperature difference outside, it is quite a
quite a blow of air coming out of those different portals, or either sucking in or coming out. And when you're working up there, you really get chilled.
Yeah, for us lay people, what is a stoke?
I'm sorry, the stoke is, and I didn't show the one cross section of the ore body, but it's where they've removed the ore body here is about 70, 80 feet thick. And they removed the ore in large rooms, almost like a cavern. And I'll show you a picture of a couple of these stopes, but it's a large room where they've mined all the ore out, and the hanging wall and foot wall on both sides are still there.
So what's that crosshatch section going down at an angle in that picture?
This is taken...
This
right here is a dike.
Oh, okay. That's
it's not the ore body. This thing's a little. We're actually taking the slice was taken through the mine on the drift. It's parallel with the strike of the ore body.
Okay.
There's another picture I saw in the one book that you had over here that is shows a cross section of the mine at right angles to the strike of the ore body. And I'll use the term drift and a drift at times, and or crosscut. And a drift is a mine working that follows the ore body, and a crosscut crosses it usually at a 90 degree angle or something like that. Okay, here's a mine map of the 300 level. It's not. Whoops. All right. Let's see. Well. That was quick. I can back up, but it's probably more work than it's worth. My laser button is real close to the button to advance the slides. This is what the portal to the 300 level looks like now. You have to kind of, you see it's caved here. You got to crawl through this hole to, boy, we're running short on time already, to get down into the 300 level. You see some old timber collapsed doors. This is probably one of the earliest, if not the earliest, working that was put into the mine back at the turn of the century. A couple more views. You notice that right here is the winze I talked about, and here's looking down the winze, and we threw some rocks down there, and they just keep on going. It sounds like forever. So it, according to that one cross section, it does connect into that stope, and you can get all the way. If you were to fall down there, you'd eventually end up on the 1500 level, probably.
What is the blue color? Is that some copper?
I suspect it's copper, but it's probably, most of it's just the iron oxide you get. The oxidized sulfides, or the sulfides are oxidizing. And I think it's a combination of just the coloration in the picture when you take it underground like that. But these walls are just coated with these oxides. You don't notice it so much in some of the other levels, just because this has been exposed so long to air. So this is one of the hazards that if you don't have the proper equipment or know what you're doing, you can easily fall in there.
So I assume it's covered when...
It's not covered, but we have locking back gates on that, so you can't get in there now. This is a picture, some old pictures. They could have very easily been taken up on the 300 level. I mean, I don't know for sure, but it looks like the vintage of the 300 level. And right here, this could very well be the winch that they were using to work on that winze on the 300 level. It's kind of on the right side of the drift, so it could very well be the very same picture that I just showed you. And you notice also their lighting system, candles. and you notice the hard hats that you don't see. So this is obviously a very old picture, probably right around the turn of the century, maybe 1909, 1910, somewhere in that. This is just one of the bulkheads back on the 300 level. We thought they might have been storing water for drilling purposes or something. And then just using gravity to get it down in the lower parts of the mine. Here are some really neat iron stalactites that have been forming up there.
Who's paying for this cleanup?
You are. No, actually, you're not. The responsible company is.
Yeah.
Here's a map of the 1100 level, and I hope I won't switch it too quick, but the portal sits out here, and we, the number one shaft is right there. We got back to the number one shaft and then came around to right here, and we didn't go any farther than right in here. They've backfilled the workings with, looks like waste, and plus we wouldn't have been able to get much farther anyway because this whole level is cut by that stope, but we would, there was only about 2 or 3 feet between the top of the backfilled waste and the ceiling, and trying to crawl over that stuff was just tough on your knees. Right in here, you have they had a slusher set up and a grizzly, and they would and they had a parallel drifts right here, and one of the drifts was where they had their ore chutes dropping the ore into, then they'd use the slusher and then scrape the ore and go down the grizzly down to the 1500 level where it was loaded on ore cars, and so I'll show you some pictures of the ore chutes and the grizzly, and then there's a stope right here that is much larger than what's shown on this mountain map, and I'll show you some pictures looking into it. Here's the opening now. The portal is pretty well collapsed, but you can crawl down into this hole, and right into this hole is this door. Of course, you can't open the door because of the collapsed material there, but you can. Someone had torn out the timbers in that door, and so you crawl through that hole in the door, but we put some bars in there now that allow bats to go in, but not people, at least without a key. So this is a kind of a tricky entry. You'd have to crawl down this hole and then bend and come out this hole. Also, you notice these white marks on here. Again, that's the high water mark. In the spring, this fills with water up to this point. And we've gone in on the 1100 level in the spring last year. And the water level at that time was right at the door level. And that was the cold. We had insulated waders. But that's the coldest water. Just even with the insulated waders on, I got cold until we walked out of the water. It was really.
Is that snow melt coming from above?
I think that's what it's a combination of that, and there's a couple seeps, several seeps in the rock that are dripping water in there all the time. But I think it's mostly water snow melt that comes down here and then flows in
from the outside.
Yeah. There's a view right inside once you crawl through the hole and turn around. Really neat geology. You can see the bedrock. Again, this was one of the, this part of the 1100 was one of the earlier workings put into the mine when they were developing and trying to sell it. And this is another part of the mine where they have, I've never seen this before, but they stockpiled waste, I guess, just to get it out of their way, and they stacked it right along the crosscut. Here's this grizzly that's not real easy to identify, but you can see a few rails across here, and this is where they would use the slusher and draw the ore to this grizzly, and then it would drop down to the 1500 level where they load it. Here's one of the big slusher. You see it, how large this thing is. One of the buckets for the slusher. It's actually upside down. When they used it, the blade was on the ground and they'd scrape it. Here's one of the draw points. You see the mineralized precipitate here. And this right here is a boulder the size of a car that's stuck in that ore chute. And there were about 3 or 4 more of these ore chutes right along that one crossed, or that parallel drift. And they would drop ore down there and then use this slusher and scrape it toward the now here's a couple pictures taken during the mining operation. I don't know whether these were actually that exact location, but this is how they did it though. Here's the slusher dragging the ore toward the
Grizzly right here, and just another kind of view of the same piece of equipment. This is the same type of device that the miners use to open up that collapsed feature above the 1500 level. Here's a view on the 1100 level, a couple different paths one could go up there. There's a fair amount of water on the 1100 level. I mean, dripping in through fractures and that, and in places, standing water, maybe 6 inches deep in a few places. And this old mine cart right here, they used for probably carrying rail and timbers around in the mine. I was amazed, and that thing was sitting in water, that those, it still moved. The wheels were not frozen, it worked. And I've since talked to some of Holden Village staffers that went into the 1100 level when they shouldn't have, but they were telling me that they'd use this thing to go across these areas where it was real wet and they didn't have boots or anything, so they'd all climb onto this ore car and they'd just go scooting. It's like the Indiana Jones movie, you know?
Hope to stop before it gets to a stop.
Yeah. This is the old powder room on the 1100 level. Matter of fact, we found some manifest sheets for the dynamite that was used up there. It was still on this work table where they would put their charges together. Here's a raise, guys looking up the raise. There's an old cage right here for hauling equipment up and down. You can see all the timbers are really rotten right here. See, it's another real hazard. People try to go up and down. There's also, in addition to the raise where they would use the cage on, there's also a ladder you can climb between the different levels, but the ladder, of course, is rotten and it'd be really unsafe. But again, talking to some of the people that have been into the mine, you know, over the years, they were going up and down these ladders inside the mine to the various levels. It's just lucky that no one has been injured.
Were any lives lost in the duration of the working of the mine?
There were a few. It was, for the most part, a fairly safe mine, and I don't remember. It's probably less than 10, I think, maybe like less than 5 even.
No, it's less than 20. I'm
less
working
than
on
20?
A project. By next year, I'll have them all documented.
Okay.
I found 11 so far.
You have?
Over how many years?
20.
20.
20?
But it was a fairly safe mine from what I can gather. This is an old drill hole that now pumping iron. The water comes out, it's precipitating iron, just like the precipitate you had down on the 1100 level. This is as far as we went back toward that one large stope where I told you they had the waste stacked in the drift. And that kind of looks like the same place, you know. This is a picture during when the mine was operating. And in here they backfilled waste into some of the, instead of hauling it all the way out of the mine, I'm assuming they just used parts of the mine they weren't going to go back into and stockpiled it there instead of taking it all the way out. Here is a view looking into one of the stopes on the 1100 level. And again, it's so large that it's hard to get a good picture of the flash to go all the way across. Some of you can see, at least in this one right here, the other side of the stope, and you can almost see it's a continuation of the crosscut that I'm standing in. Before they remove the ore, you could go right on a crosscut right through the ore body, and it continues right over here. And here's a picture that could be the same place or somewhere similar during the mining days. And this guy's looking into this stope, and then you can see where they've, here's a miner across the stope in the continuation of the crosscut. That would have been all the way through there. They could have walked through there before they removed the ore. Here's the number one shaft on the 1100 level, and the number one shaft was used to connect all the levels above the 1500 level. Since they use gravity to move the ore through the mine, the number one shaft was just used for miners and equipment. They didn't haul any ore. So it's a fairly small shaft as it goes. You notice the greenish color, and that's because this copper-rich water has been flowing through this part of the mine for 20 years, 30, well, no more than that, since 57, almost 50 years, and it's actually preserved the wood with copper. And that's why here, the timbers are pretty good shape. As other places, they're rotten. Well, anyway, here's the ladder. You could go up and down between levels if one dared to. This is the cage door to the shaft. You notice there's a here, and there's several other signs located around the number one shaft, and there are people's names and dates that they've entered the mine and what levels they've been on. And if you looked at some of these, they've been on, four or five different levels of the mine, and they did it on this ladder. And we find a bunch of old batteries up there, so they just had flashlights. They didn't have proper mine lamps or anything. Those batteries wouldn't last very long, and you'd have to replace them. So, and then you'd find places in the mine workings where they've actually put arrows on the wall so they know which direction to go so they wouldn't get lost in there. Here's a view looking down that shaft. And this is the current picture. You notice these dots. That's the water flowing down that shaft, just like rain. And this is a picture of what it was like when they were in during the mining days, and they kept things as dry as they could then. Okay, here's a map of the 1500 level. The portal is right there. That's the 1500 level main portal. The ventilator portal is right here. You notice it comes like this, and then and this is all glacial till. And then when it hits here, it's following the strike of the ore body. And what the idea during one of the remedies I'll talk about more tomorrow night is to put a bulkhead in somewhere in here, a hydrostatic bulkhead, and then another one somewhere back in here to allow us to back water up into the mine. And we were not able to, we got to the number two shaft, and we got just a little bit beyond that, but we have not been able to get back farther because it was unsafe, a lot of collapsed timbers and that. And eventually, probably next summer, we're going to be in here and opening up those areas that are currently unsafe and making them safe so we can complete the work we tried to do a couple years ago. Okay, let's see. The first bulkhead sits in here that I told you about. Then the second bulkhead's about 500 feet in. And then there's water that's backed up to about right in here, almost 1,600 feet back from the portal. You still have water. And once you get back to there, the tunnel is sloped out slightly, so water would have naturally drained out of the mine. So eventually you reach a point where you kind of run out of water. And we have to take boats through this section, and I'll show you that. We've been back here. We've gone and looked at the number one shaft, and I'll show you some pictures of what the number one shaft looks like on the 1500 level. Entirely different than what it looks like up in the 1100 level. We came around here and we kind of looked into this stope right here, which is the 257 stope. And we came around, looked into the number two shaft, and went just a little bit beyond that. And that's all we've seen on the 1500 level. We haven't been able to get back. You know, this crosscut, the main ore zone is in this area right here. And we haven't gotten any further than right here, coming back this way. And then they drove another exploration drift 8,000 feet out under Copper Basin to explore for more ore. And we haven't been able to get back there. We thought that would be a good interceptor for water, and a lot of the water that comes out of the mine would be coming from that direction, but it doesn't appear that much is. Okay, that's what the 1500 level portal looks like today, except you wouldn't find the snow there, but this is what it looked like when we finished our work in 2000. And there's metal doors behind this plastic sheet, and that is being held in place by the vacuum of the air being sucked into the mine. It's just a terrible breeze. And one of the things the miners did, they tried to make, when they finished the work, they tried to restore that portal, make it look something like it, like the old one. Of course, that's what it looked like during the mining days. Today, to get in, you got to go to the first bulkhead here, and we've got three boats stored inside that portal, and life vests and everything else, and you climb in here and pull your boat over the first bulkhead and get on the water, and then you go back 400 feet to the next bulkhead, and you got to lift your boat up over that bulkhead, and then you go back another about 1,000 feet by boat. And it is cold, and particularly in the winter. And, you know, and that's, of course, the main air door right in the 1500 level portal during the mining days. And I'm not exactly sure where this picture was taken, but somewhere showing where the west drift was. I assume that's on the 1500 level. Here's probably that same spot there where you can make a decision which way you're going to go. You get back in there and say about 1,800 feet or so, and you've got railroad track again, and you do have a lot of this orange iron precipitate. At times, water has backed up even into this area. This white, looks like soap suds, is actually a bacteria that grows and lives on the acid water, acidic sulfide rich water. This is the number one shaft, what it looks like now. You can notice the timbers are not that green color, but they're real rotten, and we did not go into this area to even look because it was dangerous. This here is an old, probably a tool area near that shaft where they probably kept tools and other equipment. Here's just another view of us doing our sampling and walking back in. And to say it's wet, and in places you'll get into the precipitate that's a foot or so deep that you got to kind of tromp through. It's not a clean place. Here's an area back near the 257 stope where you can see these rock bolts right here, and you can see the slabs of rock hanging. And it's an area where we didn't go much further because of the potential. Here is, taken just about in the same spot. Here you can see the rock bolts I showed you in the slabs. You see all the rock that's fallen is now on the floor. And you have this shaft, or the drift goes back in through this concrete door right here. You go back into the 257 stope, and I'll show you a picture there. This is a parallel drift that avoids the stope, and we went back here a few hundred feet, but it's just so much of this rotten timbers that have collapsed, and the potential for a lot of stuff to come down on you, that we went back there a couple times to take some samples, and that was it. It's just really kind of spooky back there. Okay, here's looking into that 257 stope, and we have a biologist here that's putting in some equipment that we're using to try to monitor for bats. And this is a view looking into that stope, and you notice it's so large that the flash just stops. Well, there's a picture of the 257 stope from the same place during mining days. You notice the miner right down here. And the puddle of water you see down here is they had backfilled the 257 stope up to the 1500 level with tailings. And that's just a little bit of the water that was left after they put the tailings in there. They won't hold Vespers for us, will they, Diane? Or,
No.
Okay. here's some shots looking in the area of the number two shaft. Again, you can see the orangish material up here. That's the high water mark. So at times when that portal was collapsed, it kind of varied a little bit, but at times it actually backed all the way up, all the way back to this point. And we're about probably 2,400 feet from the portal at this point. Again, we have a lot of down timbers in that area, so it is, you got to kind of pick your path through there carefully. Here's, again, you actually have some fairly large metal iron beams in there holding, this is the area around the number two shaft, so it's a pretty large room. And these miners here are standing near the shaft. Again, you can see the high water mark. Here's a view of what that same area looked like during the mining days with one of the ore cars coming through here. There's the number two shaft today. And this right here is the cage, but it's been taken out and turned on its side. This is the bottom of it, and the top of it's sitting over here, so it's on its side. And that was sitting right, came out of here. And we're all surrounding the shaft. We're collecting water samples in the shaft. There's probably about a foot of water in here. And of course, this is what the shaft looked like. Here's that cage that was laying on its side. And this is the hoist room for the number two shaft. It's a much bigger hoist room and much larger shaft here because not only did they get men and equipment up and down to the lower parts of the mine, but they hauled all the ore up on this shaft. So it was much larger. There's that hoist room today. And these are metal beams with wood lagging that's been sprayed with lime for fire prevention. And of course, what's happened is the wood is rotted out and a lot of it's fallen out of this area. So we'll look into this room, but we've never gone into it. The first time we got back there after we opened up the mine, some of the contract miners were hooping and hollering, and when we got back there kind of yelling, you hear an echo, and stuff started falling out of the back here, so we decided that we won't go in there. We'll look in, but that's about it. So anyway, that big hoist that you saw a picture of sat in here somewhere. And right here was the ore chute. When they took the shaft up and then and dropped the ore, they actually took the ore cage up above that 1500 level and dropped the ore down this chute. And this is where they would load the ore cars. And you can see how rotten the timbers are and collapsed. This is, we went just a little bit farther than this and that was it. And that's probably taken from the same spot where they were loading ore during mining days. And they didn't have any women miners in those days.
What was the average salary of a miner compared to others in the different industries?
I would say it would be at the top end, but I don't know. Maybe someone, Linda, I don't know if you know. In those days, it was pretty good wages for.
It was considered pretty good wages, and it varied over the 20-year period.
Yeah.
But the daily wage was pretty high.
I've seen it somewhere. I think it's in.
So somebody worked in the airlift up in the museum or showing wages.
Well, they didn't. There wasn't much aircraft industry back. Well, I guess there was during the war years, but I don't know.
Oh, you don't know wages per hour.
Yeah. Does anyone know? I don't remember.
Paid by the shift.
The miners' wages were daily.
They were daily wages. In the late 40s, I think there's some statistics that they were like $8 or $9 a day, which was good, and in the early 50s, it was like around $12.
My dad said that he worked about the same wage as miners, and it was $6 an hour.
He's got an answer here.
Okay.
In 1956, when I came up here as an engineering student, Mucker, entry level was 13 something an hour a day, $13 a day, the whole 14.
Do you know how that might compare working in the?
I don't remember now, but a minor got 16, but then you had a lot of jobs which you got bonus money on. Mm-hmm. Moving so much ore, or digging so much of a shaft, or a rise, or tunnel, or whatnot. So you could, some of the slushers, we're making in 1 week, could make anywhere from $90 to $300 extra. But it was dangerous work.
Yeah. Well, I went through that pretty quick, so I'm sorry if I kind of abbreviated things a little bit.
On your sampling,
you have any questions? We got about 15 minutes, according to my watch.
On your sampling, you're sampling primarily water.
Yes.
And are you finding great variation throughout
yes.
the mine?
Yeah.
And based on that, you're hoping to kind of decide which sinkages you can sampling.
Well, actually, we've sort of come to the conclusion that we're not going to be able to do much in the mine to control the water. We thought we might be able to identify some major fractures the water was coming in, or where we'd be able to divert water flow. And we could divert some water flow, but it's not would not be enough to make that much difference.
So you're talking about an external processing facility then for the water?
There will be a treatment facility outside the mine to treat the mine water.
Is there any of this sampling and work that you're doing, would that be applicable to what's going on in Butte as far as the water collecting in the open pit?
Well, a little different chemistry, but it's somewhat similar in that they're going to be treating that water. And
are you sharing information?
First, the water, Butte has no place to go. It just goes
right, true.
Into the pit and stays there.
It will eventually go into the groundwater.
It's already going into the groundwater.
Is it?
But they're in a massive cleanup now. It's
right.
High on the priority
list. Well, EPA is a cooperating agency with our project here. And I don't know, I haven't been contacted from anyone working on that project, but the EPA shares information, and we have had some people from Montana Tech out here, and I've shared some information with them. They were planning on putting together some kind of a proposal to do some pilot scale work on water treatment, but I never have heard any more from them.
So none of that treatment work has been done yet?
No, we've just been designing the remedy and the kind of treatment that we've done, and I'll be talking about that tomorrow night.
Are there any prospects of relaying at all?
No. That would be such an expensive, I don't know, there was some ore left when the mine shut down, but not enough to warrant the startup cost.